Today's reading is from Matthew. 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and his brother John and led them up a high mountain by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun, and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly, there appeared to them Moses and Elijah talking with him. Then Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, it is good for us to be here. If you wish, I will make three dwellings here, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." While he was still speaking, suddenly a bright cloud overshadowed them, and from the cloud a voice said, "This is my son, the beloved. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him." When the disciples heard this, they fell to the ground and were overcome with fear. But Jesus came up and touched them, saying, "Get up and do not be afraid." And when they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus himself alone. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus ordered them, "Tell no one about the vision until after the Son of Man has been raised from the dead." When they came to the crowd, a man came to them, knelt before him and said, "Lord, have mercy on my son, for he is an epileptic and he suffers terribly. He often falls into the fire and often into the water. I brought him to your disciples, but they could not cure him." The word of God for the people of God.
Ben, thank you. I will say you read that with a level of emotion I wasn't quite ready for this morning. Thank you very, very, very much. I also want to acknowledge something Pastor Nicole said a moment ago. This month of July marks the anniversary of our newest pastors. Pastor Regina Proctor came at the beginning of July a year ago, and this week, the one-year anniversary of Javon and Nicole Caldwell Gross. And aren't we blessed with the pastors we have in our church? I listened to Javon's sermon in which he recalled the experience of flying here with the two youngest children. I'm sure he was wishing he could go back to a year ago and relive that whole thing all over again. Other thing I want to share before getting into the message today is a word about the next couple of Sundays. For the past few years, on these upcoming Sundays in August, we do a Faith in the Real World series. We're going to do that for just 2 weeks this year. And next week, Josh Blyle is going to be here. Josh was a Marine who, in battle in Iraq, lost both of his legs. And he has an amazing testimony. You do not want to miss it next week. In fact, let me just offer this. If you know a young person, whoever struggles with their faith and wonders if the faith that they grew up with really makes a difference in their lives, and they're tempted to look back on that faith and say, "That was just a big myth," you want to convince them to be here next Sunday when Josh is with us. It's going to be a great, great morning. A word now about the last few weeks with our road trip series. We had fun at the beginning of the service with the flat Robbies. Well, even before that, let me just say a word about my last few weeks on break. We got to do an England trip, a Wesley tour with folks in the church, and saw great sights we talked about in our series before going out of town. This is the St. Andrew Parish in Epworth, England, where John and Charles Wesley grew up. In that church, they were baptized. Our group met in there for a little lecture that morning and then a time to go around the churchyard. This is Oxford, where John Wesley was both a student and a teaching fellow. And the roots of Methodism took place in Oxford. This is the oldest Methodist building in the world, the New Room in Bristol. And while we were in Bristol, we got to visit the church I served 32 years ago when I was right out of seminary and served at this church. Members of the congregation put on a coffee and a tea, and I got to see people I've not seen for 32 years. So it was wonderful. I'm showing off my name on the church picture of all the former pastors who had ever served that congregation. So that was a lot of fun. But when I wasn't here the last 5 weeks, I watched services online, and I realized as you took up that offer to take Flat Robbies with you on vacation, I have gotten around this summer. I mean, I think I've been all over the world, and these things have been amazing where they have showed up. Here are my favorite ones. I got to rock with Elvis. I got to pitch in a Major League Baseball game. There I am on the mound in the game. I got to fly on the wing of an airplane. And my favorite one. The person who took this picture said it was a glass of water until I got dropped in there. I bet after today there's really going to be a run on Flat Robbies. And like I said, now I am back in person to close out our series this morning. Let me tell you how this happened. I got back from the Wesley tour. Pastor Eric came by to see me. He said, "Can I talk to you about July 28th? I said, "Okay, what are you thinking?" He said, "Well, I don't know what you've got planned, but the pastors met, and we thought it'd be good to extend the series 1 week. Would you preach on that?" I said, "Well, tell me what you have in mind." He said, "Well, of course, this road trip series has been about the way people travel in the summer. They go on vacations, they get away, they rest, it's fun, and then at some point you come back home. The joy is over, the fun has come to an end. And now that you're back, we thought you could speak to that really well." So I guess this morning I am the end to your summer fun. But that is what happens, isn't it? Every vacation at some point comes to an end and you have to go back home. Don't take it from me. Take it from the words of the eminent theologian and philosopher, Howard Sprague. Howard, of course, was the county clerk in Mayberry on the Andy Griffith Show. If you're an Andy Griffith Show fan, you might remember the episode where Howard is talking about how his job has become boring and dull and routine, and he watches a travelogue about islands in the Caribbean, and his eyes light up, and he realizes that's what I need to do. I need to quit my job and move to a Caribbean island. And he does, to become a beachcomber. Because he believed that is what life is about. Life is about relaxing. Life is about enjoying the days, lazing away in a hammock on the beach. That is where contentment lies. He believed it until he lived it. And he found out that life doesn't hold a lot of meaning when nothing is demanded of you. And he comes back home to Mayberry because he discovered you can't live on vacation. Now, we don't have any evidence that Jesus ever took a true vacation, but there was this one experience you heard described in the reading a while ago. It has all of the elements of a good vacation. It certainly was a getaway. It was somewhat of an adventure. It held glory. It was a glorious experience, and the disciples did not want it to come to an end. Now, before we get into what happened in that episode, let's just back up a little bit in front of the story and rehearse a few of the activities that preceded this vacation of Jesus with a few of the disciples. Let's think about what went on before. First of all, John the Baptist was beheaded. Right after that was the story of the feeding of the 5,000. It was a great miracle, but it came with some stress. The disciples were concerned that the crowd was going to get hungry. They tell Jesus to send the people away, and Jesus turns it on them and he says, "No, you give them something to eat." A miracle resulted, but it came out of some stress for the disciples. That very night, the disciples got caught in a boat crossing the Sea of Galilee. They were in a storm. They feared for their lives. The next thing that happened was there was conflict with the religious leaders. And then Jesus told them about his own impending crucifixion and death. Now, I would say the disciples were in need of a little vacation after all of that. And so Jesus takes three of them, Peter, James, and John, up on a mountain to get away and to be alone. Now, we don't know why he took just three of them and not the whole group. Maybe they weren't just tired, but they were getting tired of each other. Has that ever happened on a family vacation? At some point in the vacation, you need a vacation from each other while you're on the vacation? We don't know why just three of them went, but they did. And when they got to the top of the mountain, when they arrived, the disciples go to sleep. That's what you do on a vacation, isn't it? You rest, you replenish. And when they woke up, they saw what is described as a transfiguration of Jesus. The Gospel of Matthew describes it. Jesus' face shone like the sun. His clothes were dazzling white. I believe it's a way of saying they experienced glory. They experienced Jesus in some kind of glorified state. And it must have been like a heavenly kind of experience, because Peter didn't want to leave. Peter says, "Lord, it's wonderful that we're here. Let us build three altars to you and the two people you're talking with, Moses and Elijah." Now, if you don't know, Moses and Elijah have been dead for 1,300 and 900 years respectively. I think it's fair to say that this was an experience the disciples don't have every day. And they didn't want it to end. But at some point, it has to end. Because you can't live on vacation. Why don't you repeat after me right now? Why can't you live on vacation?
Why can't you live on vacation?
Well, let me tell you. In that moment, the clouds thundered and God spoke to the disciples. And God said, "This is my beloved Son. Listen to him." Now, how do you listen to somebody? We're not talking about the days of cell phones and communication devices. To listen to somebody, you could only do that by being close enough to hear them. How do you listen to somebody? You stay near them, right? If you get too far away, you can't be sure what they say. You listen to somebody, you stay close to them. God says to the disciples, "This is my beloved Son. Stay close to him." And the next thing we're told is they were coming down the mountain. Notice that going home is described as a coming down. It usually feels that way, doesn't it? When you go home after a vacation, especially after a great vacation, doesn't it feel like a downer? You're going back to work. You're going back to demands. And that's what happened to Jesus and these three. When they catch up to the other nine disciples, a man runs up to Jesus and says, "My son is sick. I brought him to your disciples, and they could not heal him." Right away, they are back to the same demands they got away from. And you get the feeling that this is a tense moment. You can kind of imagine the other nine being just a little embarrassed, looking at the other three going, "Where have you all been?" Even Jesus gets a little testy. He says, "You perverse generation." They're getting short with each other. Has that ever happened to you when you come home from a trip? You just get a little short with each other. Because the glory has been left behind. You remember the show Everybody Loves Raymond? There was an episode where Raymond and his wife come home from vacation. And they take their suitcases up to the bedroom. They unpack the suitcase and they carry down the empty suitcases to the bottom of the steps, waiting for the other one to complete the task and take the suitcases to the basement. But the other one doesn't do it because the other one's waiting for the other one to do it. So they just don't talk about it. And for weeks, the suitcases sit in the living room at the bottom of the steps because they're just kind of short with each other now. Their tempers have gotten slight. Guests come over. Why are your suitcases sitting in the living room? Wait for that one. Has that ever happened to you? You come home and what it feels like is the glory, it's all over. Now we're back to reality. Why doesn't Jesus let the three stay on the mountain? Because he wants them to understand something very, very important. That you don't have to escape reality to get to glory. Sometimes you get away to remember to look for the glory in your reality. The Jesus they saw glorified was walking with them down the mountain. The same Jesus who would be with them when they faced a demand they did not feel big enough to meet. The same Jesus who would be with them every day. And when Jesus is in the picture, glory is present. Look for the glory that is with you all the time. And again, don't take my word for it. Go back to Howard Sprague. Listen to what he said when he went home to Mayberry.
Andy, come on, let's just a minute, dude. Well, if we're gonna go bowling, let's go.
Hi, fellas.
Hey, Howard.
Well,
what in the world?
I just got off the bus, saw your light.
Well, what are you doing here?
Well, I've come home.
For good?
Yeah.
Well, that's great, Howard. That's just great.
What happened? What nice you thought it'd be, huh?
Oh, well, it was nice, all right. I mean, the island had everything just like the travelogue said it would.
Yeah.
Broad beaches and blue lagoons, swaying palm trees and all. But I discovered something. I discovered that the average man, and I guess I'm just about as average as you can get, can't just sit around doing nothing. He's got to have some incentive to make life interesting and worthwhile.
Well, I certainly agree with that, Howard, but I thought you wanted to follow your rainbow and everything.
Yeah, well, I guess I just followed it to the wrong end. My pot of gold's right here in Mayberry.
Ah, that's pretty. You always did have a way with words. Yeah.
Could your pot of gold be your home? Pope Paul VI said, "All life demands struggle. Those who have everything given to them become lazy, selfish, and insensitive to the real values of life. The very striving and hard work that we so constantly try to avoid is the major building block in the person we are today." Yes, home is where the lawn has to be mowed and the dishes have to be washed, but there's glory in it. Home is where you have to get up in the morning to the alarm clock and go to work, but there's glory in the work. Home is where people don't understand each other and get crossways with one another, but glory can abound in it. We just have to look for it. Some years ago, the San Francisco Chronicle did a story about Linda Wilson Allen. She drives the number 45 bus in San Francisco. The reason the story was written is because the reporter rides that bus. And he noticed that Linda does things other bus drivers don't do. When she stops and waits for an 80-year-old woman to carry her groceries on, she doesn't do what many drivers do and say, hurry up, I've got a schedule to meet. She stops the bus, she gets off the bus, she gets the woman's groceries. She helps her get on and set the groceries down by her. She did something one day where she saw a young girl waiting at the bus stop, and when she got on, she could tell that she was lost. So she said, honey, sit right behind me, and I'll tell you where to get off. And she got to know her. She found out she was a college student in town, and she didn't have any family or friends there, and it was just about Thanksgiving. She said, well, what are you going to do for Thanksgiving? She said, I don't know. I'll just be at home, I guess. She goes, no, you're not. You're coming over to my house with the kids and kick back with us for Thanksgiving. And she did. When she graduated from school and moved back to Atlanta, she had Linda come visit her in Atlanta for vacation. And she would sometimes fly back to San Francisco to stay with Linda. Who does this? That's what the reporter wanted to know. He interviewed her. She said, well, I guess driving the bus isn't just my job, it's my ministry. He said, your ministry? She said, every morning at 2:30, I get up and I spend 30 minutes in prayer, and me and the Lord always have a lot to talk about. But those 30 minutes set the tone for my day, because I get reminded that my ministry is to love people and to help people. And so she does. Every day is a glorious experience on bus 45. Because she looks for the glory that abounds around her. Every year, we put on this thing called Back to School Extravaganza. It's always hot. People sometimes get short with each other. There's always work to do. It's easy to lose your patience and to get testy with each other as volunteers, sometimes with the people coming to be helped. But listen to why some of the members of our church do this.
I love serving because we can welcome people to be a part of one family and one community.
I enjoy serving because I enjoy helping people and being a part of the community here at St. Luke's.
People have helped me out along the way, and so I like to pay them back and help somebody else out, make their life a little bit better. It makes me feel good, it makes them feel good, and I think it's what God wants me to do.
And I like serving because I love to see the church engage with the community.
I love serving because I get to work alongside other members of St. Luke's that I don't always get to see every day, like Shanique.
You see those smiles? That's glory. That is glory. Seeing it in the everyday opportunities to share God's love and to be a witness to His grace and to feel His presence in the ordinary stuff of life that sometimes makes you say, I got to get away from all of this. But we don't get away to find glory. We get away so that we can come back and claim the glory that's with us. The Bible says Jesus left His place in glory to become a servant and come among us to bring glory into our everyday lives and our everyday world and to offer His life to us. That's what we celebrate today.